Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard Doherty, CEO and founder of Scale Up Consulting and author of Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. And I believe to win in today's business environment, you as an executive in the financial or services world, you really need to have clarity on the future political and also business landscape. And you know, here to talk to us about that today is no other than Dennis. Dennis is the CEO of Milbank Dartmoor Portsmouth. I won't go into the details of the naming of that, but he's out in the US right now and a really special guest because he's been around the block in financial services. He's got a lot of great knowledge to share with us. He's held senior positions in the likes of Macquarie and also Credit Suisse. So super, super happy to have you on the show today. Welcome, Dennis.
Hey, Richard. It's great to be here.
Brilliant. And, you know, guys and girls out there, as always, before we jump into it, I always like to give you a bit of a helicopter view as to where we're going today. So we are coming out of a tough time in the world. You know, COVID-19 has ravaged through a lot of, well, all of the world, right? And, you know, it's disrupted supply chains. It's disrupted businesses. It's made talent difficult to find and difficult to locate. But also on top of that right now, we're going through an interesting time when it comes to the business world and also the political world. There's political developments that are underway right now that are reshaping the way that the global operating environment is going to function for years and decades to come. And companies are feeling that. Companies are feeling the pinch right now. And, you know, in all honesty, the volatility doesn't look like it's going to let up. It's going to go into the next quarter four, and into 2023. And although there is that volatility, there are going to be challenges, but there's also going to be opportunities for those fintechs that are looking to grow. There's going to be opportunities for them if they take an approach, if they're taking a strategic and proactive approach to facing up to these challenges. And if they do that, they're going to look to, they'll be able to thrive in these environments and in the years to come. And, you know, let's bring Dennis into the show right now. And let's start at the top. There's a lot going on right now, right? There's a lot going on. I don't want to list out all the challenges, but Brexit, the war in Ukraine, there's stuff going on in China as well, China and the US, the trading, I guess, difficulties with that. And, you know, as you look through the geopolitical microscope, what do you think executives out there should be considering as they look to transform their businesses as to try and match where geopolitical realities will lay in the years ahead?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And it's a question as, you know, I sit here in Western North Carolina in the States. I have a different, probably a different view of the world than somebody who's perhaps sitting in France where there's a war going on next door. I mean, all of these draconian things that are going on in the world are producing volatility in the markets. If you look at how the market's been moving, the other day I was on a call with an investor, and you don't even realize it till you go back and you look at, we've had three monthly returns in the S&P 500 that have been in excess of 8% in the month. Mm. Just last month, we went from up 4% to down 9%, basically on one speech. You know, we had a 15% round trip. You know, we had realized volatility is currently around 26. If you go back a few years ago, it was 5. So we've quadrupled the level of market movement, to put in simplistic terms. And that is something that in the investing world that I live in, people need to get their head around. What it does is it's a leverage slayer, I like to say, whereas people have maybe had a strategy that worked well in plus or minus 2% environments. If you put leverage on top of that, you know, you have a down 10% and you're leveraged 3 times, you're down 30%. That's some real issues. So that's the first thing that I think people in my business need to get their head around. One, the availability of cheap cash and the use of leverage to, you know, expand on what would be a very thin margin of profitability is something they need to address. And that goes from trading right into to people and, you know, yeah, and how you manage people. It's kind of, it sounds, not to make light, but our biggest challenge right now in the US that people are talking about is, you know, people going back to work, working from home, whether you have to be in the office or not be in the office. For me, in my background, I started out as an SPX trader in Chicago with 500 people around me. Then I went to, you know, working at an investment bank where there were 30 or 40 people around me. Mm. And now I'm at the point where I'm in an office by myself most of the time. And I don't have a problem with that, but I've had 30 years of input from coworkers and competitors, and yeah, that is irreplaceable. And managing talent is the ultimate thing that you need to do in financial services. You know, they always say your assets ride up and down in the elevator every day when you work at an investment bank. And how do you keep those people there? And that is a very difficult question. I think at the end of the day, you need to have people in the office. And I don't know if that's just because I'm over 55 years old and that's how I learned. And that may not be the future of how you retain talent, but you have to address it somehow. And you have to show, if you genuinely want everybody in the office, you need to convey to those employees why the benefits of them being in the office. Like, it exceeds the ability to wear your pajamas and work from home. Like, you're going to further yourself and make yourself a more valuable asset to the firm and perhaps to other firms where you can then transfer to another job. So that's always been my management style when I was at Credit Suisse. Be as open and honest as you can with your employees to the point of pain, you know, where it's like, if you don't want to do this, then we're going to have to let you go. Because I remember we had Colin Powell speak once, and it was and he spoke at the conference about firing people and how hard it was to, in the military, to demote somebody or fire somebody. But he said something that still rings true today is, if you don't fire what you see as the underperformer, then everybody else looks at the person who's underperforming and feels that then they don't have to perform as well. That is something that can be applied to working from home. If you're going to force people to work from the office, and then you have somebody who says, well, I just want to work from home, and that doesn't fit, then you have to let that person go. And if they, you know, find a job at another place where they can work from home, more power to them. And I mean, at the end of the day, your hands on the tiller. If you're a managing director at a big bank, you have to drive policy. 100%. You know, and that goes to, you know, another one was compensation, which was very controversial. When you get your bonus at an investment bank, you're told, okay, this is your money. Don't tell anybody what we paid you. Keep it very secret. And I always just thought that was a bunch of crap. I was like, this is what I'm paying you. You can tell everybody what I'm paying you. I'll tell you how much I'm getting paid, but I'll tell you why you're getting paid X and the other person is getting paid 2X, right? Because he did this. Now, if I'm really bad at what I do and I'm paying the 2X person for the wrong reasons and the person getting paid half leaves, well, then eventually my performance is going to suffer. I'm going to lose good people because I'm paying the wrong people. Yeah. So being clear in that work from home and being as open architecture as possible on what you pay people and why you pay people. I mean,
I hear you.
It is Wall Street.
I hear you with all of that. You know, but I mentioned at the top of the show, you know, geopolitical realities. But And I talk to a lot of leaders every week, every month, and it feels like there's a change. The business reality is that a lot of people want something else from life and from a career, right? And that doesn't mean that they aren't going to work hard. It doesn't mean that they're not going to put in 150, 160%, but it does mean that they want some flexibility, right? And listen, fine, all power to them. But then I look at the old model. You have to go in there 5 days a week and you have to, be on the phone, you have to go to the meetings, do the things that you're meant to do. And from my reality, it was slightly different to, sales traders, etc. In all honesty, it's not different today than it was 20 years ago. The only difference is the location, right? So what I mean by that, I think through companies expanding globally, the likes of Credit Suisse, the likes of Deutsche, the likes of Goldman, etc., they have created dispersed teams. Right. And more often than not, when we go into, let's say, the London office of these big firms right now, you have one or two people in the London office, maybe 10 people, maybe a bit more, maybe a bit less. But a large majority of that team is now dotted around the world. Right.
Yeah.
Then you've also got vendors, you've also got all these other things coming in. So I think that, I believe that the location that you do your, in a way, in inverted commas, your 9-to-5, in some instances doesn't matter. And also, in some instances doesn't matter, but in other instances does matter. Okay. So I'm going to say, in the instances that it does matter is when you're learning the ropes, right? When you're learning the ropes and really trying to figure out, for example, trying to figure out trading, trying to figure out how do you structure products, trying to figure out how P&L works. If you are figuring stuff out on your own, it's going to be a nightmare, right? Whereas if you with someone, with the team, with other people around you that you can just listen to, that knowledge that you get is going to go, you're going to ultimately get it quicker. But likewise, when you said, if you've gone through all that and you're out of it, why not be locationless and have the opportunity to work where you want to work, right? I think we're going through right now, I think we're going through a figuring out stage as to what this actually looks like, what the model, what this hybrid model feels like, and who and what should be doing what inside this hybrid model. So yeah, it's an interesting time as not only in the US, but all global, all companies try to battle through this and try to figure out what's the right mix.
I hear what you're saying, but if I look at the likes of Deutsche Bank and Credit Suisse and a lot of these banks you've mentioned, their performance is terrible, right? Their profits are down. They're not preaching from a catbird seat saying, look at all of this remoteness and how great it's worked. I mean, look at Yahoo. When the CEO came into Yahoo, which is, you can work at home, their performance went straight down the tank. I mean, what I always try, one of the best compliments I ever got was from a guy, now he's a man, who worked for me, and his name is James. It was August, it was the end of the month, and it was August, some summer, and there was nothing going on. And I said, well, why don't you just skate, whatever, we can do this with, we don't need 20 people on the desk. We need 15. Yeah. So everybody pull a name out of a hat. And he looked over and he's like, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to go home and watch TV? Or he's like, I'd rather just be here. This is more fun. So creating that culture, like there's a problem with the culture at the banks that people don't want to be there. And you're failing as a managing director, as a leader, if it's work, you should try to aim it. It's not always going to happen, but you should aim to have where people will put up with that 45-minute commute to get to a place where they're learning and they'll enjoy themselves and they'll make money. I mean, at the end of the day, right? They want to be on the team that's making money. Goldman Sachs is no shortage of people. It's harder to get into Goldman than to get into Harvard, right? Their reject ratio is high. So yeah, there's a political change, but it may just be that people pursue other careers outside of, in my world, trading or investment banking. You need to be flexible, but you need to build a team and people that want to be part of that team and drive towards a common goal.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
I think the thing that comes through here, whether you are distributed, whether you are remote, whether you are hybrid, it's the team and the culture that matters, right? And the bond with inside that. And if everyone is pulling in the right direction, you're going to win, right? No doubt about it. But if there are bad apples, you want to be able to get rid of those bad apples and bring new apples in. Every culture and every business has their challenges. And yeah, I guess people have to decide what route is best for them, right? And I think your examples are great, but I can also think of some other examples that that are out there right now that, you know, look at, that could be used as a catalyst for a totally different discussion. But I think as we move forward in that debate, we also look, I mean, maybe it's over the pond, but we're also looking at, you know, talent pools, right? We've spoken about it. And how, as a fintech, as a corporate, what are the strings to pull that allow the talent to come into these organizations? Because it feels like the game slightly changed, Dennis. It feels like people seem to want something else. And I say people, employees seem to want something else. So what do corporates and what do fintechs need to be thinking about when they're considering that talent question that we've been alluding to?
I mean, you need to be more open-minded about who you're hiring, right? I mean, fintech has long been dominated as a you know, male-dominated industry, and you need to make it so it's more comfortable that women are comfortable in that workplace, and you can build that same sort of team atmosphere around, you know, being cautious to how that's done and not falling into traps. I mean, I'm still shocked when I see some of the, you know, my friend Ben Eifert wrote a very long piece about, you know, women in the financial workplace and how difficult it could be. And I mean, that should be a priority one, because, and not that you're trying to save the world, you want to bring talented people in to make your firm better than the other firm, right? You know, it goes back to what I said. If you can bring people in that feel comfortable in that workplace, you're going to perform better.
Yeah.
Now, exactly. Don't bring people into that workplace just so you can meet a standard or a quota. Don't try to put somebody into that position. You know, there are enough people, but you have to be open-minded. You have to recruit from different schools. Like financial services, I mean, at Credit Suisse, I mean, we would only recruit from 5 or 6 schools. And it was groupthink, because that's what every other investment bank did. And it at times created a culture that was poisonous and led to underperformance. And it was unfortunately, you can see that in a lot of the big banks right now. And I don't think you see that as much in the technology sector. You don't even have to go to college. If you're a good coder and you can teach yourself how to code on LinkedIn nowadays, and you can get yourself a job, no one cares what school
is. It's interesting you say that, because I can't mention names, but one of my close friends is a senior woman, was applying to a senior position at quite a large consulting business. Won't mention who it was. And she's going through this application process, right? She actually WhatsApp this over to me. And it's inside the application process. They're asking her questions about whether her mom and dad had degrees, whether her mom and dad worked in what sectors they worked in, whether they have retirement savings, all of these things that are digging into ultimately the background that you know, that she's been brought up in. I thought was, you know, out of order, in all honesty, because if you're looking at getting talent in, talent is, as you just mentioned, talent can come from anywhere. It can come from any source. I mean, look at Serena Williams. I mean, the greatest tennis player of all times, from one of the hardest working areas in the States, right? But if you constantly put up these barriers, then you're only ever going to have sort of the same people doing the same things over and over again. So you're going to have to lower them down sometimes. So, you know, for me, what are the factors that leaders need to consider in setting up these processes so we can actually get the right talent in the right positions and actually start changing some stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that goes even beyond people. And if I'll do a selfish plug here, but like to quote my great humanitarian Mitt Romney, when he came out, he said, corporations are people too, right? I said, as only a Bain consultant could say it. But you see that now, even in the investment world, the big keep getting bigger and it's harder as a person at a startup financial firm. It's difficult. The regulatory framework that's being put on people is not much different than where do your parents have assets and where are your degrees from, right? Like if the bigger asset managers continue to get bigger and they continue to put up bigger hurdles, preventing you from access. And, you know, I probably shoot myself in the foot by saying this, but they are limiting the talent that their investors, that they're required to find new products for, can have access to. And what you're finding is the smaller independent RIAs are much more open to that, and the bigger wirehouses aren't. And if you look at the flow of assets, everything's moving more towards that independent channel. You know, that for me is one of the more frustrating things about what we're seeing in finance right now. I mean, just you can apply everything we just said about employees and keeping them on board can be said of what asset managers are allowed on platforms and what asset managers are not allowed on platforms. And that is, you know, a really big problem. Let me rephrase that. It's a big problem for me, right? You know, because if where I've been doing this for 35 years, people look at my mutual fund like it's been around for 6 months, okay? And my SMA has been around for 18 months. And prior to this, I'd been managing assets in a similar way for 10 years. And prior to that, ran investment banking derivative desk.
Yeah.
But it's if at what point do you have flexibility with hires, be it people, and at what point is it just purely the talent? And at what point is it, well, what college did you go to, right? At some point it has to come to the task at hand, right? I'm always telling my kids that if we're working on something and they get, nowadays you get distracted by something shiny, like a Facebook or this, and it's like, well, what's the task at hand? We have to turn off everything else. And the task at hand is the hiring the person that is, one, going to want to be there. And that as long as somebody wants to be at that job, they're going to be successful. I've always felt that way. It's your responsibility as a manager to create that environment where people want to be there. And then it's real easy working with people who want to work towards that common goal.
Yeah, listen, I mean, also in part of this we're alluding to, I alluded to gathering data, right? I mean, we're always going around gathering data, and you also alluded to it as well. I think it's vital that corporates and also fintechs, the guys that are growing out there, make certain that, you know, that data management is a core part of how they operate in the future. Because having a really good, I mean, I've been in worlds where they are absolutely clueless as to what data is coming out of where and why it's coming out. And they can't turn off things because they're scared that it's just going to blow up the engine. So, you know, how important do you think it is right now in this day and age to really strengthen your data management practices as executives and companies out there look to really scale up and grow?
It's pivotal. One of the things you have to do in data management, I mean, it's, you know, I'm old, so I'll use the old programming, garbage in, garbage out, is the data that you're acquiring, right? I did an interview with the magazine, and I basically said that alpha is a lie, right? Everyone said, you know, is looking for alpha to create alpha, claim alpha. And a lot of people's alpha claims are biased, right? Like you will look at a manager and say, well, if I study his data and his Sharpe ratio, it's fantastic, until it isn't. You know, Bernie Madoff had one of the best Sharpe ratios in the history of Sharpe ratios. I think you need to be foot forward on your data analysis, but realize where the data is coming from. So if a manager says that he returned 20% a year every year for the last 20 years, but his first 5 years in existence, he was up 100% every year when he managed $40 million. And now he's running $6 billion and he was down 10% last year. He's net lost more money than he's ever made But that claim of he's up 20% if you annualize his returns, if you're an investor on day one, while mathematically is correct, is not factually that correct. Like the spirit of the data oftentimes gets lost. Conversely, you look at like a Billy Beane, in the US, the baseball coach, he's a legend. And there's actually a guy who's even better, the guy that owns the Tampa Rays, Stu Sternberg. Like there's a book out there I suggest people should read called The Extra 2%. And that is about how the Tampa Rays, and for people not in the US, they have the lowest payroll in Major League Baseball, but they're in the playoffs, if not contending for the World Championship, every 2 or 3 years you'll find them there. Those Billy Beane and those guys totally upset the apple cart of what was conventional wisdom based on what a player looked like. Like, oh, he's a short, fat guy, he should be a catcher. Right. He just basically dove into the numbers. I mean, a lot. And, you mentioned politics in the beginning. And I know you're talking about the political landscape. But the number one failing I've seen of asset managers over the past, 6 years has been their inability to separate themselves. I mean, hell, it probably goes back before that, probably 8 or 10 years. Their inability to separate the facts from their political beliefs. Politics are in the US especially right now are about as emotional as I've ever seen them in my lifetime. And people allow that to bleed over. And I consistently see people make bad investment decisions because they just don't have faith in the current political party in power. And where you really need to just dig into the facts and say, what exactly are they doing? What effect is that going to have on the stocks? I mean, you saw it, post-pandemic. Where, the rally that we saw in stocks in the US, because people may have felt that it was handled poorly, but they were just flooded the market with cash.
Yeah.
Right. What we're doing right now is you have to look at what the Fed is saying and what they're doing to rates. And even more importantly, in your part of the world, it's much more prevalent than it is here, but currencies, the dollar, the euro is trading 98. Why is that? And there's really no political reason around it. It's just a question of money flows. And people need to be familiar with the pipes and the structure and what's going on, not with their political beliefs behind the actions, right? And you have to separate those two.
No, I love it. Some really great insights then. Listen, as we wrap up this part of the show and we get into the flash round, from an investor's point of view, from a person that really has a good sense of the market and the structures in the market, what advice would you give to those executives out there, the fintech leaders, the guys in the corporates, as they look to really build their business into the years to come? What are the 2 or 3 words of wisdom that you want to leave with them today?
I think you need to identify and surround yourself with people who will support the business. I think that is paramount. I think you also need to view everything through a 5-year lens. I tell everybody that, from 60-year-old executives to 22-year-old kids looking at jobs, and just saying, you have to look at a 5-year lens. You have to have a plan and you need to stick with the plan. But as Mike Tyson says, everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face, right? So, be ready for that punch. And also, it's hard. It's hard work. Right. If it's easy, everybody would do it. So value your people. And if you undervalue people and they get taken away from you from somebody else who overvalues them, it's going to sound terrible, but you almost have to view that as a trade. If you're putting a valuation on a payout to somebody that you want to pay them because you believe they're going to yield X, once again, removing emotion from it, that's something that you have to do. And make sure you're not advertising to hire people in at a higher wage than the current people who are working for you. I've seen that happen a lot too. I guess it really boils down to your people. Your craft, but make sure that you have the people around you that will support you. And an investing world, communication. Yeah. Even the best time to call your clients is on your worst day. Because believe it or not, that's probably when they want to hear from you. Don't call them up, as Jackson Brown, has a lyric in a song where, you forget about the losses and you exaggerate the wins. You don't ever want to be that guy in business, right? When you want to make sure that you are you're most communicative on your worst day.
Nice. Agreed. Totally agree. And some really great insights. And now, folks, we are heading into the flash round. what is the flash round? It is some more fun off the back of what we just discussed. I ask Dennis a couple of questions, which I haven't prepared him for. I'm nasty. Sorry. Very nasty. A bit of a surprise at the end. They are, you know, yes and no questions. Nothing.
No essays.
Yeah, exactly. And then I give you the mic, Dennis, and you are allowed to ask me a question. And then we high five, shake hands, and we finish the show. So here we go. I got, by the way, folks, I got sent this. I've been requesting a drum roll. So I got sent this by one of my listeners a couple of days ago. So I'm going to try it out. If it doesn't work, I'm going to have to go back to the old drum roll. Let's see what happens. Give us a second. It's coming now. Don't worry. Slowly but surely, here it comes. So everyone's anticipating this drum roll. I can hear it. It's coming. The internet is so slow today.
It's rather anticlimactic, to tell you the truth, Richard.
Oh.
I want to go back to the old drum roll.
That's
like a Yanni concert drum roll. I was expecting blue.
There we go. It's all happening. Is that better? There we go. I'll try to do a different one. Okay, there we go. So I'm going to have to get a new drum roll. But anyway, a bit of fun at the end of the show, right? So we go. First question. There's been a lot of noise on my LinkedIn feed about Web3 and also the metaverse. So I want to know from you, is this, in your humble opinion, a myth or a reality?
It's a reality having a 14-year-old that has an Oculus, and I strongly suggest to parents out there, use your kids' games. I actually enjoy playing Fortnite with my son and his kids, and you start seeing Web3 and Metaverse, and yeah, I definitely think that that it's a reality, and it's coming at us.
Nice, like it. And now, just to add a bit of spice to the conversation, because we had a nice chat earlier, I thought I'd throw this in. Is remote work and hybrid work here to stay?
Yes. And I will say, unfortunately, right? So I'm biased on that. It is the topic du jour right now in the US, which is this thing everybody called, I forget the term for it. It's like voluntary quitting or involuntary quitting, where you just kind of show up and go through the motions and do just enough work. I mean, the employees in the U.S. have the upper hand right now. We have a 3.5% unemployment rate that is as low as I've ever seen it. So yes, currently employees have that. Employees want to work at home in their pajamas. They can. There's jobs where they can do that and be efficient. That's great. I still think, though, that you're going to need people in the office for certain things, just for team building and learning, you know, like teaching people to come up and identifying talent.
Yeah, I hear you. Great answers. And now I'm going to give you the mic, sir. And, you know, I know you've been pinging each other over the last few weeks, and you've been saying, Richard, I need to ask you this question. So here's your chance. What would you like?
This is one question I think all the listeners want to know. If you could give me the last four of your Social Security, the name of your first pet, and the street that you grew up on.
That's easy, man. Someone else asked me that earlier today, right?
Yes. And if you give me that information, I have a lottery winner in sub-Saharan Africa who will wire you the money immediately. Yeah. I guess my question is, and I have a question for you. How do you choose your bumper music on a podcast? Right? Everybody has cool, funky bumper music, and I don't have a podcast. If I ever did, that would be one of the harder decisions of how do you pick a song, or is it random? I always wonder how you pick the bumper music for a podcast.
So because it's financial services and because we're all hip and cool and, you know, in with the crowd, I wanted it to be a bit uplifting and a bit sort of vibey. So as soon as someone enters the show, they're like, boom, yeah, this is great. I want to stay in this room. I want to be here. So that's how we came up with it. Actually, I got a friend to produce it, and he sort of mixed it. And it's, you know, a couple of seconds, well, 5 seconds intro. And that's how we go intro and outro. And yeah, that was the idea of it. And let me know when we go live with this show, whether it's whether it entices you and uplifts you.
Sounds great.
Brilliant. So listen, awesome question, awesome show, some great insights and some great knowledge shared about a number of different things today. Looking forward to seeing you and going live with the show shortly. And before we jump off, if there's anyone out there or my listeners that want to connect with you and your team, what is the best mechanism to reach in?
Well, I mean, I have a LinkedIn profile. It's public. My at Dennis David, my Twitter handle. The MD Michael David Paul Larry X-ray .com, MDPLX. That's the ticker for the mutual fund that we run. That'll take you to the website. And, you know, if you just Google Dennis David at Milbank Dartmoor Portsmouth, our website will come up. And then there's a link there. You can send me an email from that.
Awesome. And folks, don't worry about, you know, scribbling all that down. That'll be in the show notes so you can, you know, cut and paste and get in touch. So, yeah, brilliant to have you on the show. And yeah, it's been an awesome episode.
Thank you, Richard. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.